1-800-736-4CA.
Yes, good morning. Gavin King with you, filling in for John McKenzie. All thanks to Pacific Toyota here on the 4CA Talk Show. Well, as I mentioned in the intro, this boy, 14, has been refused bail. He had racked up more than 100 offences, started offending at the age of 13, a whole range of offences there. So while we won't talk about this specific case, I was very keen to have a look at this issue from a slightly different angle and talk to an expert about what on earth we can do with these kids, very, very young kids, even before they're teenagers in some cases. How can we turn them around? What should the government be doing to really try and have some impact here and stop these hardcore offenders? Try and put them back, if possible, on the right path. So we're lucky to grab a few minutes now with Dr. Terry Goldsworthy. Now, Dr. Goldsworthy is an associate professor in criminology at Bond University. It's a pleasure to have him on the line. Dr. Goldsworthy, first of all, I mean, is it possible, before we get into the detail, is it possible to turn around these type of hardcore offenders with dozens and dozens of offences over a number of years? Is it possible?
Yeah, good morning, Gavin. Yeah, I think it is in most cases. There'll be the exceptions that you'll never turn around and will just be career criminals. But I think in majority cases, you could actually turn these young people around, but it's going to be a very long process and a very expensive process, and there'd be the catch. You know, the government needs to have the will to spend the money on them and invest the time in them, and if that doesn't happen, then simply you won't get them back on the straight and narrow.
Okay, well, that's positive to start with. And as you said, exactly, there will always be the outliers, the outlier cases that, you know, they're just unfortunately beyond help. But for those that we can help, let's start getting into some details. I had a chat yesterday with a former president of the Queensland Law Society who is a criminal lawyer, has represented hundreds and hundreds of youth offenders. One of his big calls was for one-on-one case management. He's saying that in all the time that he's been working with these troubled young people, one-on-one case management has been probably the most effective way to help get these kids turned around. But as you said, that does require significant investment from the government. Is that something, that really intensive long-term case management, is that something we need to look at?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, and I remember the media from Cairns contacted me some years ago and explaining a bail affidavit to me of a young Indigenous offender, a young girl who had offended repeatedly, then was given a 3-month counselling arrangement, was given safe housing, was given coupons to get food, etc., and her offending stopped. Now, the funding for that kind of process ran out after 3 months for her, and almost immediately as soon as it ran out, she started offending again.
Right.
So
okay.
You really do need that personal management. And I guess, you know, for the benefit of your listeners, we've got two different issues. One is the short-term offending cycle, and the second one is the long-term offending cycle. So we're talking here primarily about stopping the long-term offending cycle, what we need to do for that. And overarching all that is, you know, rehabilitation of the offender and the competing requirement of community welfare and safety. And there's been a lot of focus on the short-term offending cycle, and then rightly so, because we need to take these young, serious repeat offenders out of circulation to stop the offending to begin with.
Yes.
And then you can look towards the long-term offending cycle and how do you address that.
Very well said. Now, what about Cleveland Youth Detention Centre? It seems to be, it's really the only option for detention, of course, particularly in North Queensland. What can we be doing differently when they're inside? At the moment, it's almost a badge of honour. It's a little holiday for them. We had a bunch of kids go through a shopping centre here on the weekend just past. They spent a couple of hours in there causing all manner of strife and damage. And they had left some graffiti behind saying, "Straight out of Clevo," which of course is a reference to Cleveland Detention Centre. So it's a badge of honour. It's a little holiday camp. What should we be doing if they are put into detention? Surely we need to look at what we're doing there.
Well, that's right. You know, when they go into detention, what programs can they access and things like that? And we're not talking about making the holiday camp for them or give them Netflix or things like that. But we know that from government data that 80% of youth offenders have used at least one substance. That 38% of them have used ice or methamphetamines. They've experienced DV in the house. 60% of them, 46% have a mental health or behavioural disorder. So all of those things need to be looked at and addressed. And of course, I suspect they're not actually been adequately addressed, and that's why they come out without hardly any change in their behaviour. Mm. You know, they're disengaged from education and employment. They have no options, no skills. So, of course, they're going to come out and re-offend. And, you know, it's good, and, you know, I'm fully supportive of getting tough on a short-term offending cycle. I've been no slouch in proposing that. Mm. But I think, on the other hand, the long-term offending cycle also needs to have plenty of money put into it. And I don't think we're seeing that from the government at this point in time. I mean, I know there's some programs out there, but I'd really like to see them be held accountable as to, are they effective and efficient, and can we do better in that space in terms of addressing these multifactorial causations behind their offending in the first place? And then we'd stop having to worry about, you know, keeping them inside, the police pursuing them, and killing people by driving stolen cars.
Yeah, exactly. It's that two-pronged approach, isn't it? There's the short-term offending, like you say. We do need to take some of these kids off the streets, that's for sure, because of the risk to the community and those repeat offences. But, yeah, we can't just... It's just going to be an endless cycle, revolving door, isn't it, unless we address some of those longer-term problems. And some of those stats that you raised, quite disturbing about what sort of upbringing some of these kids have had. That's not an excuse. It's not excusing their behaviour, but it's something that we need to address if we're going to turn things around. The other interesting chat, Dr. Goldsworthy, I had this week was with an academic from one of the Queensland universities talking about restorative justice. Now, it doesn't seem to happen very much in Queensland. I think it should happen more by the sounds of it, but talking about some really good results in reducing reoffending if the offender can be in a room with the victim and just talking about, okay, well, how are you going to make good on the crime that you've committed, whatever that is, you know, some community service type thing or whatever. But the victim gets a chance to talk to their offender. The offender learns about the impact of their crimes. And that apparently is having some good results in trying to get these kids to understand the consequences. Any thoughts on that type of approach?
Yeah, look, that's interesting. I guess I'll probably disagree with that academic. I think the good results from the eye of the beholder. You know, in Queensland, we do actually do a lot of diversionary programs. So, like, to give you a snapshot, in 2020-21, the Children's Court annual report told us that only 309 appearances resulted in a child going into detention, only 309. On the side of that, the police conducted almost 15,000 cautions where a young person doesn't go anywhere near the criminal justice system. Mm. And in terms of restorative justice conferences, they conducted 2,300.
Right.
So a number of kids got the opportunity to go to those restorative justice conferences. The problem with, you know, restorative justice conferences is that the studies that have been done show that they're not necessarily really effective in terms of recidivism. What they are effective is in terms of, I guess, consumer satisfaction, that being the victims.
Yes,
the victims are happy that they've met the offender. They can understand why the offence happened. Mm. They may have got an apology, which also, you know, increases satisfaction with the process.
Mm.
But in terms of, you know, stopping the offending cycle, some of the studies have shown that they actually offend quicker than those who go to the normal court process.
Right.
So it really is a mixed bag in terms of what restorative justice achieves and what are you looking for it to achieve. If you're talking about recidivism, it's a mixed bag. If you're talking about satisfaction, you know, happiness of the court process or criminal justice process, yes, it seems to be more effective than the traditional methods.
Okay, very, very interesting. That's why it's important to talk to many different voices on the talk show, because we get to see it from all angles. But, you know, I mean, something could be said for at least the victim, as you said, getting that opportunity to see what is happening with the justice system, get some kind of satisfaction. So perhaps there's value in that alone. Mm. Dr. Goldsworthy, I know you have to run as well. Anything else that we should be doing that we're not doing enough of in terms of turning some of these hardcore offenders around?
Well, I just think, you know, we need to see from the government, I think, more focus on these serious repeat offenders. I mean, we're not looking to, you know, I mean, very few of our kids under the age of 14 go to jail. Very few, hardly any go to jail. But, you know, I think we need to really focus on this 17% of hardcore offenders and deal with them. You know, the tracking rollout has been extremely slow.
Yes.
Like we were told in a review, we'd had three at a cost of $11.5 million. You know, we got on top of 900 bikies very quickly when we thought they were a crime problem. These kids are committing much more crime than bikies do. And yet we don't seem to be able to get on top of these 400 or so serious repeat offenders. And I just think we need to go back and revisit how we're going to attack this core group that are causing mayhem in our society at the moment.
Very well said. Just let me pick up. I spoke to a police officer off the record a couple of days ago who said, we actually need a cultural shift, a moment in this state as to what happened with the bikies. Now, whether people agreed with what happened with the bikies, that massive crackdown, no one can deny that there wasn't an immediate cultural shift, whether it was the you know, the bureaucrats and the departments and the police, but just the general public. And you're right, the government means business when it comes to bikies. It was an immediate cultural shift. This police officer was telling me that the same thing needs to happen in youth crime. There needs to be, as you said, this incredible, strong, unrelenting focus on these hardcore offenders to let them know that the government means business, and from this day forward, we are going to take it head on, and we're not going to stop. We're not going to take the foot off the pedal until things calm down. So I think that's an interesting analogy, an interesting comparison.
Well, it is. If you look at the bikies, within days, the Newman government introduced the Vlad laws, which, you know, I thought were quite flawed, but nonetheless, they reacted immediately. In terms of resourcing, they put 100 uniformed police in the Task Force Take-Back almost immediately. They created Task Force Maxima, which was a dedicated group of about, I think, 50 or so investigators. And their job is to do nothing but focus on those 900 offenders. Here in the government, we've seen them. They've got a youth justice task force, which in the last reform package they renamed to the Youth Crime Task Force. But the only resource dedicated to that is an assistant commissioner. You know, there's no dedicated investigative capability of a flying squad or anything like that where you could have 50 or 100 officers who you just send around the state to deal with these 400 serious repeat offenders. I mean, we've done it for the bikies. It was fine to do it for that. I think it's time for the government and the Commissioner of Police, who's been very quiet on this matter, to stand up and say, well, this is the resources we're going to put into this.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliantly said. Absolutely love it. Dr. Terry Goldsworthy, Associate Professor in Criminology at Bond University, thanks for your time on the talk show today.
Thanks, Gavin.